Chapter 6. Conclusion. Has Iran's sponsorship of Hezbollah been successful ever since the enterprise commenced in 1982? Clearly, as the quote by Khamenei in the introduction attests, the partnership has been successful in terms of forcing Israel from Lebanon and in enhancing the credibility of Iran's deterrent capability against both Israel and the United States. Furthermore, one can perhaps claim that Hezbollah in some sense has graduated, since Iran used the group to train Iraqi militias after the deposing of Saddam Hussein in 2003. In fact, Hezbollah developed a dedicated division for this purpose, Unit 3800, and Levitt noted that in addition to offering a basic training course covering paramilitary skills and basic weapons training, Hezbollah, along with the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, also offered a master trainer program and an elite special forces course for elite Iraqi recruits. This is a far cry from the 1980s, when the IRGC managed Hezbollah's intelligence planning section. Indeed, Iran appeared to be using Hezbollah in Iraq as part of an effort to repeat the success it had in Lebanon, since in October 2003, Israeli intelligence noted that Hezbollah intended to replicate itself in Iraqi soil by attempting, at Iranian instruction, to build up an organization in its own image. As noted in the report, a key factor underlying the success of the partnership is the high degree of ideological affinity between the two parties, as evidenced by Hezbollah's acceptance of the notion of Veliyat-e Faqih. This ideological closeness has even led to close collaboration between the two in enhancing Hezbollah's soft power abroad, as an October 2010 study commissioned by the United States military noted that Iran has offered scholarships to African students as part of a, quote, greater diplomatic effort to simultaneously promote the broader Hezbollah agenda in Africa and undermine Western influence and credibility across the continent, close quote. Nonetheless, despite the close ties facilitated by a common ideology, the relationship has at times experienced various principal-agent issues. Recall that this type of relationship is one in which one actor, the principal, in this case Iran, delegates a task to another actor, the agent, in other words, Hezbollah, which is given some authority by the principal to act on its behalf. The task delegated by Iran to Hezbollah was to challenge Israeli and American interests in the Middle East and raise Iran's profile among Arab countries in the region. Additionally, it sought to achieve these goals while maintaining plausible deniability. One 1996 report by Israeli military intelligence noted that, quote, Iran uses terror against Israel rarely and rationally, out of an awareness of the grave diplomatic damage which it could cause itself if its role were to be exposed, close quote, and that it usually attacked Israel indirectly through Imad Mughniyeh and, by extension, Hezbollah. Iran certainly collaborated quite closely with Mughniyeh. As one Israeli military intelligence document from 1995 noted, Iran is aided by Hezbollah's operational infrastructure abroad, which is based mainly on Shiite expatriates through the Islamic Jihad apparatus of Imad Mughniyeh for the purpose of attacks. It is to be noted that recently links have been tightened between Iranian intelligence and Mughniyeh's apparatus, which helps Iran locate candidates from Islamic and Palestinian organizations for training in Iran or Lebanon. It appears that Imad Mughniyeh has a role in the organization of this training. But tensions in the relationship between sponsor and proxy centered on the status of Mughniyeh, as there are indications that the Iranians believe that Mughniyeh wielded too much power, which led them to divide his responsibilities among several individuals after his death. This power was evident during the later stages of the hostage crisis, as the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency concluded that the Iranians had to bargain with Mughniyeh to secure the release of certain hostages. Additionally, Baer indicated that the Iranians were frustrated with Mughniyeh's penchant for freelancing or conducting operations without prior approval from Tehran. This frustration appears to have been mutual, as Levitt noted that Mughniyeh sought to establish a degree of independence from Iran, and that one Israeli intelligence official noted in mid-2008, after the death of Mughniyeh, that, quote, Hezbollah does not always do what Iran wants, close quote. At other times, Iran has been frustrated with Nasrallah. Katz and Hendel noted Iranian discontent with Nasrallah after the 2006 war with Israel, which led Iran to make a number of unspecified structural changes to the group, after which Nasrallah had to seek Iranian permission to undertake certain operations. This frustration appears to have been related to Hezbollah's over-reliance on Iranian-supplied missiles in the 2006 war, which led to the depletion of Hezbollah's stock of missiles and to a greater Iranian desire to determine how its weapons are used by the group, to avoid the depletion of the arsenal. The changes instituted by Iran appear to have restricted the group's room to maneuver, as one Israel Defense Forces official in 2009 noted that, quote, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah's authority is somewhat restricted, and whenever he pops his head out of a bunker, he sees an Iranian on top of him. Nowadays, most of the control over the group is from Iran, close quote. Another manifestation of principal-agent issues is the reported failures of the two parties to deconflict operations. Levitt noted that as Hezbollah operatives were preparing for a bombing in Bangkok in late 2011 and early 2012, they were not aware that the Quds Force was preparing an operation there, and the latter was apparently unaware that Hezbollah was using the Thai capital as an explosives distribution hub. Additionally, the Iranians were apparently unaware that Hezbollah was planning to carry out an attack, which was ultimately successful, against Israeli tourists in Bulgaria in July 2012, with Soleimani reportedly asking his subordinates, "Does anyone know about this?" To which the answer was no. Interestingly, the choice to attack Israeli tourists in Bulgaria appears to have been the outcome of a reevaluation of Hezbollah's role in Iran's shadow war against Israeli, American, British, and Gulf interests, and a strategic overhaul of Hezbollah's external operations wing in early 2010 after a string of failed international operations by the group. Juxtaposed against successful Israeli efforts to disrupt Iran's nuclear program at this time, which included successful cyber attacks and assassinations of Iranian scientists involved in Iran's nuclear program, Iranian officials concluded that Hezbollah needed to reinvigorate its external operations wing, which had been de-emphasized after the September 11th attacks to avoid being targeted by the United States, with the group being assigned the role of attacking soft targets, specifically Israeli tourists, while the Quds Force was assigned the task of attacking American, Israeli, British, and Gulf states' interests. Undoubtedly, the assignment of more difficult targets to the Quds Force is an indication that, despite Hezbollah's noticeable progression since its founding, the recent string of failures, such as botched efforts in Turkey in September 2009 and Jordan in 2010, has consigned the group to a secondary role in the partnership, at least until the group restores the capability of its international operations wing. These changes are likely to have motivated the comments of the U.S. Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, who indicated in February 2012 that the partnership between Iran and Hezbollah was, quote, a partnership arrangement with the Iranians as the senior partner, close quote. Overall, from an Iranian perspective, Hezbollah has clearly had a positive impact, as it enhances Iran's ability to credibly deter Israel through actions that fall short of a critical threshold that would draw a conventional response from Israel. Yet one must be careful in drawing conclusions regarding the utility of sponsoring proxy groups. Success must be judged relative to the goals for which groups are established. While Hezbollah's deterrence of Israel is notable, and its success in evicting the Israelis from Lebanon is noteworthy, both of these achievements represent goals that are, relatively speaking, achievable. As the Soviets in Afghanistan, the Americans in Vietnam, and the Indians in Sri Lanka came to realize, conducting a counterinsurgency campaign in a foreign land is a very difficult undertaking and often leads to failure. In retrospect, such conflicts, particularly the first two, arguably did not involve truly vital national interests that reached the level of, say, existential concerns. However, the existence of Israel is at stake to the extent to which Hezbollah, with Iranian backing, does indeed attempt to liberate Palestine and march on Jerusalem. Similarly, within a domestic context, the secular nature of the Lebanese political system was at stake to the degree to which Hezbollah sought to overthrow the existing political order and establish a clerical regime in Lebanon. Hence, the sponsorship of proxy groups may be less successful in terms of achieving desired outcomes if the goals of the partnership necessarily infringe upon the vital interests of opposing parties, such as the existence of targeted groups and countries, or the very nature of political and social systems.